Welcome to part two of our conversation with Andy Moore about the Haunted Park Hotel.
Okay, the last one of them was a couple of weeks ago, and it was the Falcon Hotel, and that was in Bromyard in Herefordshire.
Okay.
Now, this building is, I wouldn't even hazard a guess how old it is. It's a white timbered frame building on the high street of Bromyard. It's still an active hotel. We had guests there whilst we were investigating. From the front of the building, like I say, it's white timbered. It only looks small. It doesn't look a large hotel, but as you get in, it expands backwards further and further. There's a full-size ballroom in there. There's a new addition that used to be the old stable block. That's quite large as well because it was an old coaching inn. And then the downstairs, we've got some cellars as well. We investigated the cellars, but the cellars weren't that active for me. But my first group, it was run with a team I work for, which is called HD Paranormal, which is Jane Harris's group. I don't know if you guys watch Help My House is Haunted. It's on Discovery Plus, with Jane Harris, Barry Guy and Ian Norman. Jane's got her own event company and she hired it. Nobody investigated the building before us. She'd done a lone vigil there a few months prior that she did a kind of Facebook live from, and then she negotiated with the owners to see if we can get a public event there. My initial feeling was that this has got quite a nice vibe to it, a really nice gentle vibe. That was to turn a little bit different on the initial walk around that I did. So we got there an hour before the guests and she said, do you want to have a wander around and have a look, see where the hot spots are? And I was like, yeah. I was in the stable block. That was our meeting place, our base room. Immediately I got a lad of about 14 years old, a facial injury, bleeding, chest injury, and he kept presenting himself to me like that. I chose to ignore that for the time being and carry on with the walk around. I went into the ballroom, and you can imagine how large a ballroom is, and there was a guy, and I'd say this was like 1930s dress, maybe 1920s, I can't be sure, to be honest. And he was wandering up and down, muttering, and every now and then he'd stand next to a wall and headbutt the wall. And I was like, what am I seeing here? This is just weird. Why is this guy headbutting a wall? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking quite violently. So bear that in mind as the story continues.
Okay.
I did get some sort of like mental illness with this man.
Okay.
I couldn't work it out. He then walked into the oak room, which is an oak-paneled room, set up very much like a private dining room. You could tell that the building was hundreds of years old. And I've got a young man, and he looks as though he's in 19th century dress with like a long frock coat on, the breeches and like the stockings and like buckles on his shoes. He got long hair tied back in a ponytail and he kept looking for something. And I couldn't quite work out what he was looking for. So then the public come and then we split up into smaller groups. Now, Jay's just invested in this new mirror, so we will be obviously doing mirror scrying and that kind of thing. But this new mirror is a two-way mirror, and you put it on a table, one sits one side of the mirror and one sits the other, and you look through the mirror and observe the changes in the faces, just like you would at scrying. Mm-hmm. So I wrote everything down that I picked up on the walk around. I've even drawn the picture of the man upstairs who was in the 19th century dress, and I got the name Daniel with him. As we were doing the scrying, on both participants' face, on their left-hand side, there appeared to be really dark spots of scarring, is the only way I can see. And the next two people, it looked like there was blood running down their faces. At the same time, one of the ladies in the group was itching so much she had to leave the room. I wrote in my book at the same time that this lad was absolutely filthy, dirty. He was full of fleas, and that he was some sort of stable boy, which you could imagine back in those days, hygiene wasn't prominent.
And sure.
Living with horses, you'd carry everything, wouldn't you, really? People were feeling as though they'd got a facial pain, very severe tough ache. And then they were having problems breathing as though they'd been winded. I wrote in my book at the same time that this lad had been working with the horses. One of the horses had kicked him in the chest and broke his ribs. His ribs had gone into his lungs and obviously punctured his lungs. And then the horse had backed up, and as he was lying on the floor, he then kicked him in the face. So that tied in with what was going on. We skipped to the end of the night when we had some feedback. So we worked as three independent groups. We'd not exchanged information as we'd rotated around the building. And each group that had done the mirror scrying had got the same thing. And people were still in pain with their mouths and sides of the face, mm-hmm. all on the right-hand side of the face. So there was kind of like evidential bit to that kind of got people talking a little bit more, because, you know, we're talking like 70% of the people there experienced something with that young lad and his injuries.
When you're there and you start to experience physical pain yourself, does that scare anybody to say, okay, enough, I'm out? Like, if this has this ability to do this to me, what else does it have?
Absolutely. For me, there was no maliciousness that was coming off this lad. It was not that he intended to hurt or scare. I think he was just trying to put on his last moments. And for me, it seemed like a slow, agonizing death.
Yeah.
As you kind of suffocate yourself with the blood in your lungs, and then you've got all this facial trauma that you're dealing with the pain with as well. I also draw what appeared to be a doctor as well, that had come out to try and obviously help the young lad, but obviously there was nothing he could do. Mm-hmm. Very thin-faced man with the little round spectacles. And a couple of people who did the mirror scrying, and we got some photos of them as well, had actually kind of got that residual apparition on the face, even though they weren't wearing glasses or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the stable block, which was quite interesting. The oak room, we got the name Anne up there. It would turn out that this, through a spirit board session, we connected with Daniel, who appeared only to be 16. I thought he was slightly older. I thought he was in his early 20s, but apparently through the spirit board, he was only 16. And then he kind of disappeared after that. And then a woman called Helen come through. And as we tried to communicate with Helen, it was coming through really strong on the board. And she was Anne's sister. Now, this is the story that unfolded that was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
That this Daniel, a young man, had an affair with Anne, who was in her 20s, and he got her pregnant. Obviously, back in the day, that wasn't the thing that to be done, and, you know, he got no prospects at the age of 16 to support anything. She got all the shame in the world of this had happened, And she then took her own life in the stable block by hanging herself. Mm-hmm. But she actually had the baby first. And she killed the baby because she was so ashamed. Her spirit was still roaming the building. And it was her sister, Helen, who'd fully crossed into the next world. And she come back asking for help for Anne because she was so traumatised of what she'd done. One, killing her baby, and two, taking her own life. So we did arrange something at the end where we actually did manage to cross Anne over. It took most of the group to do it. I had about 20 people in tears at one stage because of what was going on. But that was done, and that was, so, yeah, a bit of a strange one. Not come across anything like that before. But she took a while to be persuaded to actually cross. So, and then the next one was the guy in the ballroom. Now, we did an Estes session in there. And it was two people on two different Estes devices, and they were picking up the guy that was going around headbutting walls. Now, the story that came out from that was, once again, quite tragic and quite sad. Mm-hmm. It turned out that this guy was in World War One. He was one of the guys that used to tunnel under the trenches, under no man's land, and bring up the tunnel in the Germans' trench. So quite a, you know, a physically and demanding job, and quite a scary job. Very robust guy. As the war finished, he survived, and he come to work at the Park Hotel. Sorry, not the Park Hotel, the Falcon Hotel. That was his job after the war. Then unfortunately, one day in the ballroom, there were chandeliers. And for some unexplained reason, one of the chandeliers fell on top of him, crushing his head.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He lived, he survived that. But eventually he did pass a few years later, but he'd been in constant pain ever since with his head. And the only thing that relieved the tension and the pain in his head was to headbutt things.
Oh, wow.
It's just so bizarre and weird. But it just purely come through to tell us that story. Nothing more than that. He didn't need any help. He didn't, you know, wish us well. And all three groups that had done the Estes session in there, independently of each other, had all got the same results. You know, head trauma, head pain. The same name, Tom, was coming through on each one. Two separate psychics had got the story about the underground tunnels in World War One. And the funny thing was, this guy got a sense of humour, and he was like saying, you know, I tunnelled under the German trenches, hundreds of feet of soil above me, and I survived. I come back out the war, and a chandelier dropped on my head. Can you believe it? that was what was coming through, yeah.
I mean, so of all things to take you out, it's the chandelier, yeah.
Yeah.
At least he had some humor about it. Yeah, my gosh. Wow, that's amazing. It sounds like two very, very compelling locations that you've had a chance to dig into.
Yeah, I'd definitely go back to the Falcon. There's a lot more to give there, a lot more. And because it was the first one, when you go to a location that's not been done before, the spirits are not interacted with any psychics or mediums, they stand back. But these guys, boom, they were rushing in. But there's a few other spirits that were standing back. And I think the next time that we investigate, which is Halloween, I believe, we're going back. I think we'll get a few more stories that come through. But for me, in terms of evidence, the fact that each group consisting of between 6 and 10 people were getting the same stuff independently. And at the review at the end of the night, it was like people were absolutely, no way, you kind of got that, we got that. So in terms of evidence, even though there's no scientific evidence to back it up, but in terms of personal evidence and group evidence, it was a really good place to tie everything into. So yeah, it's an interesting place.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Andy Moore about the Haunted Park Hotel. A big thank you to him for sharing his experiences with us today on the program. And thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.